open up to Genesis chapter 45. Genesis chapter 45. As we continue to progress through the story of Joseph, and you think, starting way back in Genesis 37, of seeing his brothers be so harsh against him. They were so angry with him because of the partiality of their father toward him that they could not even speak a friendly word to him. And that's when you know it's getting really, really bad, when you can't even say something nice when you see someone, especially even within your own family. And as you see what Joseph has done, what the Lord has brought him through, we'll get to see it really unveiled a little bit more tonight in Genesis 45, of coming to see Joseph's attitude about all these things and what he has come to learn in going through these difficulties. And so here it is, in the first time when his brothers come down because of the famine. We're a good 2 years into the famine by now. And they come in needing food, and Joseph provides everything they need for Jacob and his brothers. He gives them their money back. He fills their bags full of grain, sends them back home. And whenever they discover the grace that's been shown to them, they tremble at it. And Joseph even goes on to say, unless you bring Benjamin back, you will not even see my face. And they have so much respect, or they see the power that Joseph has, they even come to call him the man when they're even talking to their father. They don't call him Zaphnath-Panera. They just say the man whenever he talks. This is what he says. And so sure enough, they run out of all the food until finally they either have to die of starvation or go back to Egypt. And Jacob finally, or Israel finally, relents to say, you can take Benjamin with you. And as they go down, here's Simeon, who's been in prison this whole time while they're away. And finally, these moments have come together. Once again, you see Joseph show them grace. He serves all of the 11 brothers at noon at his own house. He gives Benjamin a greater portion than the rest. And the house steward is doing exactly what he's told to do. And then finally, it comes time for them to leave. Once again, Jacob tells his house steward, fill the bags, give them their money back, and put my silver cup in Benjamin's bag. And now he's called them back. They've come into his presence. He's saying, all right, now it's time for Benjamin to stay with me. He says, he's the one who took the cup. He's the one who's going to be under my care. Judah, initially, I appreciate Richard bringing this up last week, that initially whenever Joseph is sold, specifically, Judah is the one who says, why should we just kill him? We can make money off of it. There's no profit in just killing him. To where now he's already promised his father, if anything happens to Benjamin, he says, you can take I'll be security for him. And now you see this long appeal that we went through last week, starting in verse 18 and going through the end of chapter 44, where Judah makes this appeal, and it's so starkly different toward Benjamin. He's saying, will you let me be your slave? And let Benjamin go home. And you see over the course of these 22 years that Judah's heart set has changed. He's looking differently at his brothers now. And it comes to this point where Judah is pouring these things out. And I even wonder if 22 years before, whenever Joseph is in the pit, if he can recognize the voices of his brothers as they speak up above. And now to see Judah changing. Chapter 45 opens this way. It says, then Joseph could not control himself before those who stood before him, or stood by him. And he cried, have everyone go out for me. So there was no man with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. Notice what he does. Now, how long did Joseph have to prepare for this conversation? I mean, you know, he knew for sure whenever Simeon was there and in prison, surely the brothers are going to come back for him. They're going to need food eventually. And so he knows in a matter of time, whether it was a few weeks or a few months, this is going to come to an head. And this is going to come together. And at the same time, you think back and go, how long has he been thinking about there might be a conversation with his brothers at some point later? And think of how that's kind of changed over time. Maybe the conversation he would have had with them whenever he was a slave in Potiphar's house, if he was ever found, might have been different than the conversation he might have had if they found him whenever he was in jail, in the chief jailer's control, as opposed to now that he's number two in all of Egypt, this conversation. Well, if I ever got to have a chance for that conversation, what would I want to say? And notice when it gets to this point, as he's going to finally unveil and reveal who he is, what is the one thing he wants to make for certain about that you know in verse 1? Who is this conversation for? This is just for us. We don't want any Egyptians around to hear what our family has been doing to each other. Isn't that something? He doesn't say, I want to tell all of Egypt about what my brothers did to me. He says, all the Egyptians have to get out. You think this is on purpose? You know it has to be, or else he wouldn't say it. And so here it is. He couldn't control himself before all those who stood by him. He cried, have everyone go out for me. So there was no man with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. There are no witnesses at all other than his own family. This is just a thought to meditate on, maybe share some ideas if you have some. Why do you think he sends them all out? Why do you think? Family matter, not for public consumption. Why do they need to be a part of it? And you think here in terms of going, love covers a multitude of evil. And sure enough, there's some evil that's been there. Not on Joseph's part, but you see the picture. And to think, don't we need to do that sometimes too? Of going, you know what? This is just between brothers. That doesn't mean we need to tell everybody. Or even family, you're going to have different situations. Richard. Right. Something along those lines. Thinking they're doing it for him whenever that's not what he desires at all. Good point. Verse 2. He wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard it and the household of Pharaoh heard it. Now realize, Chuck already brought it out. He's already said in verse 1, it's been shown, he says he couldn't control his emotions. And to think how emotional he is about this moment, that he weeps so loud that it's heard by the Egyptians, and because it's heard by the Egyptians, news about what's going on travels as far as where? Pharaoh's own household. Now, I don't know about the situations you've been through in life, but you think in terms of being in a different room than somebody else and being able to hear them audibly cry or weep? Those are tough moments. Pretty tough moments. And so here he is. To see his brothers, his first emotion is tears. Now you might be going, well, what are the motive of these tears? Verse 3. Well, before that, I want to remind you of we've looked at it before, so we're not going to go turn over. But if you want to write down a little note for Psalm 56, verse 8, there's a quotation, it's a psalm by David, and I'll read it to you. And David says, and this is after he's running from Saul. Saul wants to kill him. And he says, you have taken account of my wandering, speaking of God. He says, put my tears in your bottle. Are they not written in your book? And to think how many tears were there to God for God to write down in his book about this day. And also to see the parallel. What about whenever we cry? You ever feel like whenever you cry and you're by yourself that you're the only one who will ever know? And to think it has never been true. God is attentive. And to think he's so attentive that he writes it down in his book. And specifically this idea is he has a bottle of your tears. That should tell us something about how close of a relationship God has with what we go through. We don't go through anything that he's unaware of. And so here's Joseph's moment. Here are these things. God's got it written down in his book. Verse 3. Then Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Is my father still alive? Notice, what's his big concern? Is dad still alive? I mean, every time that this has taken place, there's always come around kind of a little bit of a hitting this on the side, whether Jacob's alive. How's he doing? Is your father well? And now just straightforward, he says, I'm Joseph. He says, is my father still alive? But notice the tail end of this, verse 3. He says, but his brothers could not answer him. Is it because they don't know about their father? No, it's not that at all. He says, for they were dismayed at his presence. Now, if you read this through in a bunch of different translations, you'll get a bunch of different words because it is a hard Hebrew word to translate because it covers such a broad swath of emotions. Just to give you a couple of ideas. Literally in Hebrew, the word means flustered. It's also translated terrified, troubled, stunned, frightened, dumbfounded, trembled. In the CT translation, it would be overcome with emotions. There's a lot of things. If this was a movie, this would be that moment in time where they show all the flashbacks of the past. All those tough, hard moments. And they would go, oh, yeah, for Joseph. But Joseph's not the one who's feeling this way. This is his 11 brothers, and they're not all feeling the same way at the same time either. I mean, once we get another dozen verses down the road here, you'll see this is quite a different moment for Benjamin than it is for Reuben and Judah and Simeon and Levi. He's getting to meet his brother that he really never knew as a kid, that he heard all these stories about from his dad. You got a bunch of other guys who are feeling really guilty about what they did out of hatred for their brother. There's a lot of things going on in this moment. But there's one thing that they all share together. They're all dismayed. They're all like, I mean, you almost imagine the idea of going, just kind of going, what? I mean, you talk about coming out of left field. They were not expecting this. Because keep in mind, how long has it been? 22 years. Now, we'll see that nailed down here in the next verse. Then, or as it comes along here, verse 4. He says, then Joseph said to his brothers, please come closer to me. And they came closer. And you go, come closer to me. And you imagine for them going, what's he about to do? I mean, they know all the Egyptians are outside. Like, uh-oh, no witnesses? But that's not what he's thinking at all. He says, come closer to me. And they came closer. They're willing to listen. Isn't that something? They weren't willing to do that 22 years ago. They didn't want to talk to him. And he said, I am your brother, Joseph. I mean, earlier, I am Joseph. Is my father still alive? Now, just so you know, I am your brother, Joseph. As if to say, oh, just to Joseph. Okay, well, maybe I'm your brother. It's me. Then he says, whom you sold into Egypt. Oh, he remembers. He didn't forget. Okay. All right. But then look at the heart of Joseph. This very next verse really gives it away. And it shows the motives that he has out of what he's doing. He says, now do not be grieved or angry with yourselves. Because what would this moment typically lead to? What idiots are we? Here's our brother who grew up to be this ruler over Egypt, and we couldn't even talk friendly to him. He says, don't be grieved, don't be angry with yourselves, because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. Now, I just want you to think about this for a moment, because I certainly don't know the answer. And if you come up with it, please tell me. I don't know at what point in Joseph's time, since being sold at the age of 17, did he realize that God is really the one that sent him to Egypt. You think it was in Potiphar's house? You think it was while he was in jail? Do you think it was whenever he interprets the dream for Pharaoh? Or after the 7 years, whenever things are getting really good? Or whenever it just starts, the famine begins? I know which one I lean toward, but I don't know. And so he's telling them here, he says, God's the one who sent me here, not you. I know you sold me. But this was all part of what God desired for me. Now, so often whenever we go through great, vast difficulties, we don't always look around and go, what is God trying to help me grasp? And what is he helping me lay forward for to help other people here? We usually do what? We look, why me, poor me? We start looking in those self-centered, selfish ways, and does that ever help us? Yet, why do we keep doing it? Isn't that something? We know it doesn't help us. Because we've got to be broken of it. Good point. So, you notice here, he says, God sent me before you to preserve life. Now, I wonder if he didn't come to that the first time that his 10 brothers come to Egypt, and he's sending them away with all their money, full bags full of grain, and he just sends them on home of going, maybe that's why God brought me here, just to provide for them. Because if you remember, whenever they first came, it's only like the second year of the famine, which tells you there's still 5 years to go of going, is that the reason God brought me? But you know for certain, at this point in time, he knows it with conviction in what he's saying to them. And he's had time to think about this conversation since they left town. Now, continues on. Here's your time frame that you've been looking for all along, verse 6. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. Now, real quickly doing the math, he's 30 years old whenever he interprets the dream for Pharaoh. There's 7 years of famine, of abundance. And then come these 2 years of the famine. So, you know, his age is 39. You know that his father, Jacob, is 91 years ahead of him. So his father is now around 130 years old. He could be just a slightly bit less. He could be 129. But still, to think, this is the kind of thing that's going on. Would you think you would be asking about your father if he was still alive, if he was 129, 130 years old? You know, in our mind, we go, no, I wouldn't be asking because people don't do that much anymore. But in their day of going, is he still alive? Now, notice how it continues. Here in the end of verse 6, notice, remember it talked about how bad this famine was? How ugly were the cows that came up out of the Nile River in the dream? They were so ugly, I've never seen cows so ugly in all my life in all of Egypt. How ugly is the famine? What are they not doing anymore? They're not even plowing the fields. They said, psh, not even worth it. And of course, if there's no plowing, what else is not going on? There's no harvesting either, which tells you how bad is the famine. Could you just go, well, if we farm enough, we can still make enough. Like, if you don't have it, you don't have it. Then, verse 7, once again, you see this conviction. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant in the earth and to keep you alive by a great deliverance. He says, I'm here so that we can be a remnant. God put me here for a reason. And isn't that something, whenever you go through great difficulties, to finally get to that moment where you go, I know what I've gained by the hand of God in being here. Because look at what you find in Joseph. He says, look at what God's done. Joseph responds out of doing what's faithful and righteous, and look at what God's done with him every step of the way. He had favor in Potiphar's house. He had favor while he was in jail. He had favor now in terms of before Pharaoh. And to go, look at what's going on here. Then, I enjoy this next part. Verse 8. Now, therefore, it was not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his household and ruler over all of the land of Egypt. As if they didn't know about the man. But here's another aspect of this. Just a little thought. Notice, what does he say about his relationship to Pharaoh? He has made me a father. What does that lead you to believe about Pharaoh's age? Younger than Joseph. And Joseph's only 39 years old. Isn't that something? It's interesting just how he says it. I don't know how far we're supposed to take that. But he says, he's made me a father to Pharaoh. I mean, was Pharaoh, do you notice how close Pharaoh is with Joseph? In terms of how he's treated him since coming in? All these things together. Then, and typically, just a side thought, usually Pharaohs were handed down from generation to generation. So if this man is Pharaoh, then probably what's happened with his father? He's probably dead. Now, that is an assumption, so be careful with it. He says, made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his household, even Pharaoh's household, ruler over all the land of Egypt, verse 9, hurry and go up to my father and say to him, thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not delay. And what do you think the brothers thought in that moment? Oh, how are we going to tell Jacob about this? Because what are they going to have to do? For the first time in 22 years, these men who claim to be honest men are going to have to tell the truth. Chuck. Right. They have to go this way. Valerie. Right. He's even telling them, don't be angry with yourselves. Don't grieve yourselves. You see him going, just hurry up and go tell my father. And keep in mind that Jacob has several more years to live. So don't think that he's just hanging on by a thread here. But here's the point in what he brings these things through. He says, I want you to go back and tell my father. Go back and do this. And it's going to be quite a moment for them, and it's going to tell you nothing whatsoever about that conversation in Genesis. It's not even going to give you an iota about it. Then he says, tell them that God has made me Lord of all Egypt. Come down to me. Do not delay. Verse 10, you shall live in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near me. You and your children and your children's children and your flocks and your herds and all that you have. And he says, you're going to live in the land of Goshen. And Goshen literally has the meaning of drawing near. I want you to be near me. Because how much closer is Goshen than it is in Canaan? Quite a distance. It's like saying I live in Holt Summit versus I live in Washington, D.C. from Jeff City. I mean, it's like, it's right here. Not very far away. So, here's this mindset he's coming together with. He says, I want to give you this land. And I want you to notice it's going to be described here coming up by Pharaoh about what kind of land that really is and really see what he's offering to his own family. He says, you shall be near me, you and your children, your children's children and your flocks and your herds and all that you have. He says, I want everything. I want my whole family to be right here with me. Then, verse 11, there I will also provide for you, for there are still 5 years of famine to come, and you and your household and all that you have would be impoverished. If I left you to yourself, what would happen? You would die. You would be impoverished. He says, your children's children, your grandchildren, Jacob's great-grandchildren, however you want to look down the line of going, they would be nothing but skin and bone. He says, I want you to come down here and be near me because I want to provide for you, because God has brought me down here to bring about this remnant so that we will be taken care of. And he's let me and he's flourished me through all these difficulties and all these hardships and all these agonizing things just to provide for you. And of course, who are you thinking of? None other than Jesus. He goes through all the agony, all the pain, all the difficulty, so that who can benefit as part of his remnant? Those of us who are in Christ. Brings about where we would be without him is impoverished and worse. Verse 12. Behold, take a look around. Your eyes see and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see that it is by my mouth which is speaking to you. Now you must tell my father of all my splendor in Egypt and all that you have seen, and you must hurry and bring my father down here. Now, I know probably most people read that and they go, boy, he really wants them to talk about how great he is. Like, don't break your arm patting yourself on the back here. But just understand the statement of going, you tell dad everything that is provided. That's really what he's going after here. Of going, don't delay to stay in Canaan where you're going to be starving. Come on down. Everything will be prepared. It'll be ready. Then, notice verse 14. He says, here's really this emotional aspect of it. Then he fell on his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept on his neck. This is so nearly unimaginable to me. The only thing that I can kind of tie this together with in our present day would be like if you had a brother or a sister who was in the military and they went off to war and they gave you the dog tags and they told you that they died in service. And you have the funeral, the gravestone is set up in the cemetery. A decade goes by, and then all of a sudden, they ring your doorbell. And you realize, in a moment, what you had thought for the last decade that would never happen, that you had only dreamed of, is now on your front doorstep. And to think for Jacob, having these two sons that he favored in Benjamin and Joseph, and now to actually get to see each other, put their arms around each other, and to wet each other's necks with their tears. You talk about a moment. Now, I want you to notice it doesn't say the exact same thing in the next verse. On one side, verse 15. He kissed all his brothers and wept on them. For Joseph, he is so ready for this moment. So overwhelmed with emotion. He cries on his brothers. But I want you to notice what's not there in verse 15. It's interesting it doesn't mention anything about their reaction. I don't know what really to make of that. But it has a stark contrast with verse 14, doesn't it? Leroy. Right. Same mother in Rachel. then if you notice verse 15, here's that part I was telling you about. We don't get any iota into the conversation. It just says, and afterward, his brothers talked with him. There you go. I know we're probably wishing, I wonder how that went. What did they say? Verse 16. Remember, news had spread to Pharaoh's house. So here it goes a little further. Now, when the news was heard in Pharaoh's house that Joseph's brothers had come, it pleased Pharaoh and his servants. Now, keep in mind, Joseph's brothers had been there before, at least 10 of them. And one of them had been in prison for a while. But this idea about them being relatives had never gone anywhere beyond Joseph's head, at least in what we know. Doesn't even talk about him telling necessarily the house steward about these relationships before you get to these kind of days. So then it continues on, and he says next, he says, it pleased Pharaoh, and notice this one, and his servants. What kind of relationship does Joseph have to have with these servants for them to be so excited and pleased that his brothers have come? What does that tell you about the way Joseph treated his servants? Man, he treated them well. He treated them with respect. It doesn't mean that he didn't command them to do things. You notice Pharaoh was pleased as well. You'll see how pleased he is in these verses to come if you haven't read them before. But going, he is so excited. Oh, your family's here. It is kind of fun to meet family of other people that you know. And so here they are. And then notice Pharaoh's response. I think this is marvelous. And it also tells you, whenever earlier Joseph said, you know, Pharaoh, I'm like a father to him, you see that he was telling the truth for sure. Verse 17, then Pharaoh said to Joseph, say to your brothers, do this, load your beasts and go to the land of Canaan and take your father and your households and come to me and I will give you the best of the land of Egypt and you will eat the fat of the land. He says, you tell your brothers to go back to Canaan, get your father, come back down here and I'm going to give you the best of the land and I'm going to give you the fat of the land. And in the midst of a famine, a bunch of brothers who sold off their brother, who is now number two in the greatest kingdom on the planet at the time, is now saying, Pharaoh, number one, you go get them, and in the midst of this famine, I'm going to take care of your family. The best of the land and the fat of the land. And remember, the fat is the very best part. So he's saying, I'm giving you the best, and I'm giving you the best of the best. Doesn't get any better than that. Chuck. Right. Right. They haven't experienced it yet in terms of these things. Then notice how it continues on, verse 19. Now you are ordered. Get a load of that from Pharaoh. It says, now you are ordered. Do this. Take wagons from the land of Egypt for your little ones and for your wives and bring your father and come. Do not concern yourselves with your goods, for the best of all the land of Egypt is yours. He says, let me tell you what else. You just take these wagons on back with you to make it easier so that the little ones don't get hurt along the way. Think about Pharaoh here. The prudence that he has, and you kind of go, did he gain this prudence just because of Joseph? And how he's dealt with people? And how he's dealt with the situations that he has? And you notice this situation specifically, and I want you to think about this. What can you tell Joseph has done toward his brothers already? Any bitterness? He's already forgiven them. When did they ask? They hadn't. He wasn't waiting. He says forgiveness is to be offered. And so you look at that. Can we learn from that? Can we learn to be forgiving even when nobody's asking? Joseph's come to these realizations at some point along this way. It really wasn't you that sold me to come here. God was bringing me here. God was bringing me here so that I could provide for you a remnant for God, to take care of his people he made a promise to about the descendants of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. He says, so you've been brought here for a reason. He says, and I know that, so that you can, life can be preserved. Now, you think of these things together, he's already forgiven. And look at what he can do after he's already forgiven. What does he show them? Mercy. They don't deserve this. They deserve something far worse. Then on top of mercy, he shows them grace. And you notice how he's not having to fight words back of bitterness and anger and wrath. He's ready to show them mercy and grace. Then, because it would have eaten him up if he didn't. It would have destroyed him. And God wouldn't have shown him favor either. Now, notice how it continues. Verse 21. Then the sons of Israel did so. They listened. And Joseph gave them wagons according to the command of Pharaoh and gave them provisions for the journey. To each of them he gave changes of garments, but to Benjamin he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of garments. Now he gave changes of garments to the other 10 brothers, but to Benjamin he gets 5 times as much. Now if you look at this, it says 300 pieces of silver. A shekel of silver is 4/10 of an ounce. So if you do the math, you're going to come up with something like 120 ounces of silver. If you trade that on today's market, about 75 cents an ounce, you're working at saying, he said he basically gave him $9,000 in our current market. Now, that wasn't the market then, but just kind of gives you a general comparison. Going, he says, here's $9,000 for your journey. Whenever your family leaves the house and you want to give them a little gift for gas, you go, you know, here's $9,000. Have a safe trip. Hope you can afford the hotel. Now, but you just see, once again, this abundance, because he knows Benjamin was not part of this plot at all. At all. He was way too young. Verse 23. To his father. Now, you've seen his brothers, what's been given to them. You've seen specifically to Benjamin what's been given to him. And now, a gift for dear old dad. Verse 23. To his father he sent as follows. 10 donkeys loaded with the best things of Egypt. 10 of them. He says, and 10 female donkeys. We'd probably say Jenny's. He says, loaded with grain and bread and sustenance for his father on the journey. Now, it's going to be one thing when if these brothers come in back home and say, oh, you won't believe what's happened to Joseph. You're like, Joseph? What are you talking about? We go, and you might question, like, is this really real or is this some dumb joke? And going, they can't afford 20 donkeys filled with the best of Egypt with the money they went down with. This would have to be something special. And so in a way, this is kind of a witness gift. I don't know that that was the intention, but that's what it would be. Verse 24. So he sent his brothers away, and as they departed, he said to them, do not quarrel on the journey. Because you know what happens. If any of you come from a family of more than just one child, whenever somebody gets blamed for something, what is everybody wanting to do? It is not my fault, it is your fault. Joseph, with the wisdom that he has, and I want you to realize, just see the wisdom that he has through this chapter. He leaves them with one command whenever they depart. Do not quarrel on the journey. He says, nobody needs to be blamed. You don't need to pin the tail on the donkey. You don't have to figure it out. Then verse 25 says, then they went up from Egypt and came to the land of Canaan to their father Jacob. They told him, saying, Joseph is still alive, and indeed he is ruler over all the land of Egypt. But he was stunned and did not believe them, as you might very well expect, right? If you thought one of your children was dead and it had been 22 years and he had never shown up again, if someone told you that he was alive, you're probably not going to go, oh, well, certainly. Now, here's another one of those funny words. If you notice here, it says that Jacob was stunned. This word for stunned in the Hebrew has a literal meaning of being sluggish. If you can imagine a moment, and boy, I hope you haven't had very many of these in your life, but I think we have, where you get word of news that just hits you right in the gut. Typically, it's bad news. I can remember a couple of instances like that in my life, and I'm sure you probably have had yours too, where all of a sudden, everything slows down. And you kind of get numb, and you start to wonder, is this really true? Now, here he is, and he's about 129, 130 years old at this point. So whenever someone who's 130 is stunned and they slow down and become sluggish, it tells you about how slow it really is. But he says, but he was stunned and he did not believe them. But there's something that changed that. Verse 27. When they told him all the words of Joseph that he had spoken to them, the land of Goshen is prepared for us. The Pharaoh said the best of the land, the fat of the land, the best of the best is going to be prepared for us to draw near to where your son is. He says, and when he saw the wagons that Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of their father Jacob revived. When he saw all this, because he knew, look, my boys can't afford that. And apparently he knew his boys wouldn't steal it. He says, all of a sudden, Jacob starts to realize he really is alive. You can only imagine that, how wonderful that would be. And then verse 28, then Israel said, it is enough. My son Joseph is still alive. I will go and see him before I die. And to go, wow. He says, there's only one thing left to do, boys. Pack it up. We're going to Egypt, and I'm going to see my boy. And sure enough, this is where it leaves us. Next week, come back, chapter 46.